It really is a fantastic interview. As I say, the world exclusive. So you've got to check it out. Sammy Jacobs talking to you two between 7 and 8.20.
Sammy Jacob at FM in Chicago with the band U2, with a couple of people from the band. We've got Adam Clayton and The Edge with me today. The first question I've got to ask is, how sensitive are you to public and the music press's opinion of the band?
I think everyone is sensitive to how you're perceived, but at this point in time, I think we've learned that the media represents their own little corner of perception, and that it actually doesn't really necessarily relate to what our fans think or what the general public thinks. So we don't really care too much about it anymore.
Doesn't it affect you at all if you sort of read a bad review of a gig or anything like that? Do you sort of...
Some of them are very funny, actually.
Sure.
You know, there was a Melody Maker review there the other day, which was just incredible. I mean, I can't remember the name of the guy.
I think it was Everett True.
I mean, he wrote off a nation of 250 million people, you know, in the Melody Maker. It was funny. We had a good laugh. In fact, Bono... We did anticipate that he was going to come in and do a bit of a hatchet job, so Bono sent him round a hatchet before the show with a little note on it, go on, do it, and he did.
Yeah, and it sort of says a lot about the guys writing the pieces and the stances of the publications. It's strange that a lot of those publications survive on the concept of the acts that they're writing about becoming successful, and yet when those acts do become successful, the papers seem unable to take a stance that incorporates that success. It's like they can't deal with the success, they can't comment or criticize the success, they just have to tear it down. And I think that's very sad to see what's happened in the English media, because the press has destroyed a number of potentially great bands that could have had careers that had kept going and still be relevant, and instead I don't think there's been a significant act out of Britain that's survived in the last 10 years.
Do you actually enjoy challenging people's perception of you? Do you think you're misunderstood in any way?
Well, we have to. There's this thing within you too, we've always had it, that we've always wanted to feel like we're moving on, we're going into new areas to keep it exciting for us, you know. And it may seem like there's a master plan to, you know, to kind of debunk old YouTube myths or whatever, but it's a much less conscious thing. It's much more about just the band themselves wanting to get into new things, and so it's not a conscious manipulation in that sense. It's not like we sit down and say, well, I think it'd be really good if we did such and such, you know, would really shock people, you know. It's just not on that level.
I think where people seem to have problems with us is almost those self-appointed analysis of what we're doing. If you keep in touch with the fans and read the fanzines and stuff, it's really surprising at how much they sort of understand, how much they know about where the band is at and what the band is trying to do, whereas the rest of the mainstream seem to be constantly trying to establish whether we're sort of some kind of megalomaniacs with some kind of world plan to sort of banish sort of cancer and pestilence from the world, which, I mean, we'll get round to eventually, but probably not this year.
Achtung Baby, the album, is quite a contrast to the last sort of three albums, Rattling Hum, Joshua Tree, Unforgettable Fire. So in a way it's connected to the last question I asked, but is that a deliberate attempt to maybe shock some of your fans, maybe pull in some new fans?
No, it's really the album we wanted to make, you know. I think people imagine we write in a complete vacuum, and no one does, you know. Whereas we're influenced by music that's going on around us, by what's happening in movies, TV, you know, it all has an impact on how we write and what we write about. And it's just, you know, it's, what is it, three, four years since the record before, and things have changed. We've changed. We're interested in different things, and I think people can analyze, you know, changes you make, turns you make in your music too much. That's just kind of what we're into right now.
I mean, if you look back in as regards folk music or blues, which is where a lot of what modern music is coming from, people writing in that idiom at that time, they were always writing within a political context, whether people were unemployed, whether there was food around, whether people were moving on to find jobs or whatever. So I think music has always had a context in which it's come out of, and that has been in some ways a political context, an economical context, certainly challenging your environment and representing in your songs what's happening at the time.
Right. The because theoretically you could have played pretty much safe and sort of done a similar album too, so you made the Joshua Tree.
Yeah, but you know, at this point in time, survival for us is not about economics, it's about just artistic survival and keeping it interesting for us as four individuals. I don't think any of us want to be in a band which is just about making money and churning out the same old ideas and hanging on to achievements of the past, you know. Why would we want to do that? I mean, up to now, we've always taken risks and challenged ourselves and gone into areas that we were, you know, a little unsure how it was going to work out. And that's kind of kept us interested in rock and roll. We don't want to give up that at this point in our career.
I mean, when Unforgettable Fire came out after the War album, I mean, there was a reaction of, oh, it's, you know, a different record, you know, you've really changed, do you think you'll survive? But we've been doing this ever since we've been making records, and one day people get used to it.
The remix of Better Than The Real Thing, the dance remix, whose sort of idea was that? And is that something you can see yourself doing more often?
Well, we've been doing remixes for years, you know, since the War album. At that stage, we worked a lot with Francois Kevorkian from New York. And, you know, the whole remix thing has become much bigger since then. But we're not particularly precious about it. We often get remixes done, and some of them we release, some that we don't release. But we find it's kind of interesting to give somebody else who's completely objective, has no feeling about how a song was written or what the intention was, to get the multi-track and just see what they can do with it. And I see it as our song, but somebody else's work in some senses. And certainly The Real Thing mix is not really our work as such, you know, although it's our song. It's Paul's work, and he did a great job.
Yeah, he did a really good job on that.
Did it seem bizarre to see you two in the dance charts? Was that sort of...
Yeah, it was a bit strange, but, you know, I love going out dancing, and it was great to actually be on the dance floor dancing to one of our songs and not fall over, you know, and it was a good experience.
How aware are you of musical trends, and do they sort of affect... I mean, are you sort of conscious of musical trends, and do they affect your sort of current stuff?
I think inevitably there's a kind of compromise, which is when you're touring and away, it's harder to stay in touch. But in key cities, you do have people that you know, you do have clubs that you know, so you can kind of plug into what's happening. But it tends to be when you get back at the end of a tour, when you get a chance to really kind of check out some records and find out what's going on. But I think we're fairly up to the mark at this stage.
We are interested in what's going on, you know, and it does have an influence on our work. And I think that's the whole thing, that's the whole idea. There's no new ideas out there, it's just about interpreting ideas, it's about making them your own. So in that sense, also, we're not particularly precious. We will allow other people's ideas to come through our work, as long as it's... At the end of the day, as long as we feel like we have contributed and it's become our own, we don't really mind sort of who we rip off. It's very much an open thing. It has
we're
been.
Not elitist like that.
So would it be fair to say that you don't compromise your music to the point of where you think a track or an album will sell?
Definitely not. Usually we try and fuck it up if we think it's going to sell.
You know, I mean, there's sometimes where you know you've got a song that's that has a particular, you know, it could go one of two ways, and you might nudge it in a particular direction. Because not necessarily because you want it to sell, but because it'll be a better song. It's a very interesting thing. You want the compromise of being self-indulgent, but also producing something that people can relate to and that communicates. So to be completely self-indulgent, I think, is not right. But you don't also want to be so concerned with what else is happening around you and what other people are doing that you don't have anything of your own to contribute. So it's a kind of balance.
Between the band and certain sort of industry parties, whether it be the record label or whatever, where you're saying, look, we think this is a great album, this is what we wanted to do. I mean, do you ever get pressure from other parties saying, but look, guys, you know, this is a business and we're going to have to sell a few records here, and it's not quite what we think you should be doing?
No, we don't really. We've never been in a position where we've had to deal with that much input from our record label or any other business entities. We, from the very beginning, we've always been very careful to protect that kind of freedom. And, you know, we got on great with our record label, probably for that reason, that we finish a record, we give them the record, and only then do we start taking their phone calls and figure out what we're going to do. But we've never really asked the record company to get involved in the process of making a record.
We've tried hard over the years to kind of assert our independence, and I think you have to do that. If you're not prepared to argue and discuss things with the label, then, you know, you do find that they're in the studio there with you, telling you what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. But we've kind of said, this is what we're going to do, this is why we're going to do it, and this is what we want you to do. And I think as long as you deal with it that way, and they feel involved, even if they may not agree with the way you feel about it, there is respect on both sides, and that's worked for us.
The Zoo TV idea, how did that actually come about? How did that picture form?
It sort of grew, really. It started, I think, during the making of Acton Baby, when Bono started working on the lyrics for The Fly, and a whole kind of new character almost emerged, a new sense of irony in Bono's lyrics. And from there, when we started doing the video for that song, we brought in John Klein, who's a guy working out of New York, was working with Mark Pellington on Buzz TV. We were discussing like new trends with the television and new ideas of editing, and the Fly character and that video was like the beginning of, for us, I suppose, you know, a new awareness of the potential of TV and electronic media, and how in the context of rock and roll, all the stuff that was going on in TV could be brought into rock and roll videos and rock and roll performance. So when we started talking about doing shows, it seemed like kind of a natural next step to incorporate that into what we're doing live. So we just started having discussions and sitting around and throwing out ideas, and we got Pete Williams, who's our lighting designer, very heavily involved, and between Pete and ourselves and then various other contributors, we put the indoor tour together. Using technology that hadn't been available up until then, the new video wall system from Philips. And we just started playing around.